It's 18 minutes past. Is it 18? It is. Good heavens. 18 minutes past 10 o'clock. Time flies when you're having fun. And I told you earlier that I'd be introducing you to a very special guest on the morning show, on the Dave Charles Show, and it's Natasha Barnes. My guest this morning, who has a wonderful CV that reads like a... Well, you've done so much, Natasha, and you continue to, and I'm very pleased to call you friend. You're primarily an artist and a hard-working artist at that, but you also have many other strings to your bow. So this morning I thought what we'd do is we'd take a little walk down memory lane to find out who you are, what influences have shaped you, what your life's philosophy is, what your hopes and dreams might be, and then we'll talk about your current projects, because there are many. So, welcome to the show.
Good morning, Dave. Thank you for having me.
Let's start at the beginning, because it's a good place to start. Where did you grow up?
Well, I'm actually a Free State girl. I grew up in Parys on the banks of the Vaal River.
And it was probably a little different when you were growing up. I believe things have changed a little in that part of the world.
Absolutely. It was an idyllic childhood. I was raised on a farm, had a lot of freedom, and it was the type of town, or dorpie, should I say, where you could, you could take your bicycle when you were in grade six and go to the bioscope on your own at night. I mean, that's what we used to do as children.
Okay. And you grew up as sort of almost a country, a rural country existence. No doubt, if I... And listen to what you're telling me, that you grew up as an Afrikaans kid, but fully bilingual now. How did that work?
My family are English, but, being raised in a small town like that, we had a bilingual dual medium school. So only 11 English children in the school, and I was in the same class from what you would call grade one right until, I think it was standard five, with the same children, like just the same 11 people.
It's interesting that you say that you're from an English background, which is lovely, but I read somewhere or heard somewhere that you're also related to a very famous South African politician from back in the day.
Well, you've got me there, but it's Jan Smuts. So, yeah, my family, through my mother.
And if ever there was an icon of a massive thinker, a man who literally changed the way the world was going in a certain way, and it's a pity that his philosophy wasn't universally adopted, and particularly in South Africa, but what a wonderful... And I urge you, dear listener, if you ever get a chance to, there's a book called Holism and Evolution by Jan Smuts that kind of sets out his view on the world and life, and it makes so much sense. He was a wonderful, wonderful character. Did you know him? Before your time?
No, it's before my time. His grandfather and my great-great-grandmother are brother and sister.
Okay. There's another connection to the world of academia, in that one of your antecedents produced the school dictionary.
Yes. It was called Hemstra van der Merwe and Bosman, and it was written by my grandfather, who was A.W.S. Barnes. And he wrote the bilingual dictionary from English into Afrikaans and vice versa. He also wrote all the school books. So back in the day, they were called English Made Easy for second language, and also, as well as Afrikaans for us for second language. So he had a doctor of languages, and he dedicated his whole life to education and in pursuit of languages.
So your heritage is extraordinary. Here you were growing up in Parys, clearly a very intelligent, bright girl, but you're also a very good sportswoman. Did that start at school?
It did. At school, I used to do a lot of sprinting, and I've still got a couple of records that are standing. I used to do the 100 meter and the 200 meter, and I absolutely loved it. I just love running, if I can just be out there running. And so my early years was mainly on the track and field.
And that love of running has been almost an anchor for you right the way through the decades as they've changed. So you're still a very passionate runner. We'll talk about that a little later as well. If you were to look back at your school career, was there a teacher, because generally there is, in everyone's life there is someone, and it's often a teacher, that sees your potential, and that encourages you, and you can blossom as a result. Conversely, there are also, no doubt, many folk will sympathize when I say that there are those that had exactly the opposite effect from the world of academia. So is there a teacher that you can think of that influenced you positively?
Yes, there was absolutely. There was a Mr. Ludick and Mr. Luan Ludick, and he was a history teacher, and he instilled in me the love of history. So not only from the South African perspective, you know, I'm a great reader of all things history. I've just returned from the UK where I spent a day just trawling through the Imperial War Museum. I'm absolutely fascinated with history. And so I think my love of that was he made history so interesting for me, and it never left me. And he was also my athletics coach. So, yeah, definitely had a huge influence.
A 2-for-1 there.
It was.
All right, let's take a little breather, a musical interlude. We'll come back and find out what you did post-school and how you launched your career. 27 and a half minutes past 10 o'clock on a Monday morning on the Dave Charles Show with Natasha Barnes, my special guest. We're talking about influences, Natasha. You clearly did well at school, and you clearly enjoyed your career at school, and that set you up for... Did you know what you wanted to do from the get-go?
No, absolutely not. And my parents took me to one of these to do the test to see what your best aptitude was.
At the CSIR or the NIPR, National Institute for Personnel Research.
I was a professor in Potchefstroom, as far as I can remember. And we did the tests, and I wasn't very impressed. I thought it was a waste of time. And at the end of it, he said, look, your first choice in life, you should become a sculptor.
Oh.
And he didn't even know that I was autistic, that I could paint or draw. And he asked me what I was going to do, and I said, I'm on my way to Cape Town. I want to go and study cookery and go to this Cordon Bleu school. And he said to me, you will become bored within a year. And he was not wrong, Dave.
Well, but you went on that culinary journey first.
Yes.
And you did it really well, because eventually you produced an illustrated cookbook. And if my memory serves me correctly, you kind of not only became a really good cordon bleu cook, but you also used that in a way to give back and to rehabilitate those that had lost their way. Tell us about that.
Absolutely. So I end up in Cape Town, and I do this cordon bleu at the Saulwood Kitchens Cordon Bleu School of Cookery. Was a 3-year higher diploma, which was internationally recognized at the time. And I really wanted to travel. I had that travel bug early in my life, but the time wasn't right. It was sort of just early 90s, 92, somewhere around there. There was a lot of things going on in South Africa. And so I ended up in the Oyster Box Hotel in Durban. And I worked there for a year and a half. And it was lovely.
As a chef.
And I wasn't the top chef. I was just, you know, starting out. I was chopping mushrooms a lot. I remember that. But it was a wonderful foundation for me. And that's how I ended up in Durban. And while I was there, I said to my dad, I said, you know what? I'm really bored. I want to go and do something else. And I was thinking about it. And then I got a call from, in those days, there was a magazine called Your Family Magazine. I don't know if you remember it. At the time, it was the largest women's magazine in South Africa, and they had 300,000 readers, which for the age and the era was a lot. And they needed a cookery editor, assistant cookery editor. So I joined the team, and I actually fell in love with writing, and I fell in love with the creation of the food. So I had this huge test kitchen. There were three of us. It was all sponsored by all the big appliance companies. And we would go in on a Monday, and I would just sit and write recipes all week. And then I would food style all the food, and the photographers would come in. And, you know, those days, there was no digital. You had to have what they call 4x5s. They were hugely expensive. And the magazine group employed all its own photographers. And we would do shoots, which would take up to 10 days to do the following month or shoot. We actually worked 3 months in advance. And so I spent a good part of, must have been 10 years with Your Family. And I, during the 10 years, I left and came back and left and came back. Because it's something, you know, once you do it, you've always got that in you. And there's not many people at that time in the industry that were writers and recipe developers and could do the food styling. So I kind of, that was the creative outlet. And I also did all these big wedding cakes, and I did an advanced course, and I used to do all the cakes and the birthday celebration cakes for the magazine as well. And that then morphed into me working part-time for them. And then one day somebody approached me and asked me to help out doing a course at Westville Prison.
That's what I was dying to get onto. Went to prison.
No, I said, look, you know, let's be realistic. I'm 32 years old. I've had this wonderful 10 years at the magazine. I'm a cordon bleu. I'm not going to work at a prison. This is not for me. And they said, please, can you help us, Natasha? This lady's going on maternity leave. We really need your help. And so I agreed to step in and went to the maximum security prison and met with the people in charge of the courses, because education, you know, reform through education. And while I was there, I thought, okay, I'm going to give this a try. And I can tell you, Dave, that 3 weeks became 5 years of my life. Wow. I eventually had three cooking schools, one at Westville Prison, one at, I think it was called Swindon Tech. It might still be around, I'm not sure. And then I had a third school down the south coast called at Umzimto, at the prison there. And what I would do, then I was approached by the Danish government, and they were going in towards outcomes-based form of education, where you had assessors going to the kitchen and you didn't sit and learn like a parrot. You know, you basically perform tasks, and as you performed the tasks, you were then awarded a credit, and it went towards the outcome of your learning experience in the kitchen. And so I became a trained licensed assessor, so I could then go into hotels and into schools and assess chefs and in the hospitality industry. But I always knew that the cooking, I did my bit for society, right? But I can't say I want you to do it forever.
You made a good contribution, and then you took yourself off on a sabbatical and went pretty much around the world compiling and creating a marvelous... We're going to talk about that in a sec, but right now I'm going to play another one of your choices. You like Van Morrison, I believe.
I love Van Morrison.
Now, you're on the Dave Charles Show on 88 FM. Talking with Natasha Barnes this morning, and what a life. Everyone's got a story, but some have got more extraordinary stories than others. And on the show, we try to find those in the community that have stories to tell so that, well, we can share in those stories and hopefully inspire you. We got to the point where you were ready now to do something different. You were still in the cooking vein, but you wanted to take a trip around the world and identify dishes and then turn those into recipes and then turn that into a recipe book.
Actually, Dave, that came a little bit later. So the sequence of events was first off, while I still had the cookery school, I paint. So in the afternoons when the school was finished, I'd go home and paint, and eventually I had so much art I didn't know what to do with it, and that's how the second chapter of my life starts. But while I was traveling the world selling the paintings, I was always collecting recipes as I went around the world.
So just stop the bus for a second. You started selling your art around the world?
Yes.
Wow. Hey, I mean, oh. So here is a homegrown talent, because I believe you are self-taught to a degree. You studied a little bit, but mainly self-taught. And believing that there's a market to be had beyond the local market, which is often, the talent isn't recognized necessarily in the spot from which it emerges. I think many people have experienced that. But you decided that the world was your oyster. I'm going to go and sell my painting. Wow. Wow. If you were a fella, I would use a naughty expression to say how big they are. But you can clearly, you have what it takes. And you believed in yourself. That, what gave you that self-confidence?
So, I had a neighbor. And the neighbor was on her way to Abu Dhabi to a trade show. to go and sell her pottery. She'd been doing this for a number of years, and she made like bird baths and, you know, just functional stuff. But she had this export market in the Middle East that she'd been doing for a few years. And she came to me the one day and she said, come with me, Natasha. You know, why don't you come and sell your art, and I'll give you the wall space, and then I'll take the floor space, and we'll do this trade show together. And I remember chatting to my mom and saying, I don't really know what to do, because, you know, it'll wipe out all my savings if I go to this fair. And eventually I took the plunge, booked the ticket, and went with this neighbor of mine. And I was at the fair, and the first day, I'll never forget it, and this German gentleman came up to me and he said he's from this publishing house called Verkerke, which was a very big deal back in the day, in the 80s and early 90s, was really one of the biggest print publishers in the world. And he said he would love to publish my work. And I sort of had this Bambi in the headlights look. You know, I said, what do you mean? And he said, I want to make a poster of this painting, and then I'm going to sell this and you'll earn some royalties from it. And I was so green, like I didn't know anything about, you know, what the posters were, because in South Africa we're not exposed to what people are exposed to abroad and have been in that level of art. And so I agreed, and he said to me, look, he gave me his card and he said, if you're serious about your art, come to this fair. This is in Birmingham. It's the largest consumer trade fair in the world. And there's a hall, and it's just for art, and that's where you need to be because you're good enough to be there. So I turned up at the fair 6 months later, and he said to me, I knew you'd be there. He said, you just have that kind of chutzpah.
And he believed in you clearly, and he was right.
Yes, and he took that image, and that image went into IKEA, which is one of the largest retail sort of home furnishing companies in the world, and it went into 19 million catalogs.
Wow.
And that was the beginning of 29 years roller coaster, which is still going on today.
So the glissando out of the world of cookery, well, because during that time you did produce a wonderful cookbook, but that was now a hobby. Your main line was now art. Mm. And so your career has had this wonderful thread that weaves through it, all creative, but you've been fortunate enough to, I think, find your groove, because that's important. You've got to know who you are and what you do and what you do well, and then find the market. Now, let's take another breather, because I want to come back and talk about that, because that's where you are right now, and that's really exciting. So let's play another of your exciting selection of songs for the morning. In this one, by Mary Mary. We've gone from the world of cooking to the world of art, where you found your niche, and that was a while back. And since then, you have continued to produce prolifically. And you travel the world, and you literally every odd month or two, you're on an international flight, and you must see the world from a very different perspective. I wanted to ask you, with what's going on at the moment, and everything kind of, are you still keen to travel?
I don't have a problem with traveling, but I can tell you that the hangover from this is going to be worse than COVID. So I've just come back from London last week. It's my third trip for the year. And I am starting to see the same signs as I saw in those early weeks where COVID was, people were talking about it and people were holding back. So when you do an art fair, which is basically what I do there, it's like a trade show. And for those people that don't know, it's like going to a Decorex, but it's just filled with art. And people who go to art fairs have money, so you can tell who's spending what, and you can tell by the trend of what they are buying that particular fair as to what's happening in the economy in Britain and Europe. And I've been seeing it slide little by little every fair for the last few years. Things are very tough, you know, regardless of what they love to put out there. I think the middle classes are really being squeezed,
yeah.
And the hangover coming from what's happening in the Middle East is going to have huge repercussions for all of us.
And you're content to live in Belita. You have another home in the bush in Hoedspruit, and you spend your time between Lucky Girl. But Belita is home. Why? Why do you settle in Belita?
Oh, I love it. I came 17 years ago, and you're going to have to carry me out here. It's just, it's such a beautiful place. It's so free. I've met the most wonderful people. It's like you find your tribe. And I think to be really happy in life, you need to find those that are most like you. So for me, getting up in the morning, meeting my friends, going for a run, running along the ocean, you know, just bumping into people I know. It's still small enough to have that small town vibe, but it's big enough that you can still lose yourself here. And I think because of my upbringing, growing up in a really, really small town in the Free State, I think that I feel the connection when I'm here far more than perhaps if I lived in Cape Town or Johannesburg. I really am a small town girl.
And Ballito, for all its enormous potential, is still quite a small town. We tend to we look at it and we say, well, it's the biggest, fastest growing part in the place in the country, and it probably is. But right now, you get up in an aircraft, you fly over. It's a little purple patch along the coast, and it's growing, but it's still, as you say, it still has character and charm and lovely people. Lovely Indeed. People, like my very special guest, Natasha Barnes. So, Natasha, just a bit of stargazing, future gazing. Where to from here for you?
Well, Dave, you know, the painting never stops. It's, as I said, it's been 29 years, almost 30 years now. And it's like a bit like a treadmill. You know, you do work and then you see it go out the door and then you've got to start again. It's not like an architect who builds a house and he can drive past it every day and go and look at the fruits of his labor. So, and that's a little bit sad that you're always chasing the next painting that you have to do. And, you know, the work gets shipped all over the world, so every market in the world is different. I send a lot of work to Japan, and what the Japanese like and want and require is completely different from the work that I ship to America or to the UK. So for me, it's always about being on top of the trends, on top of what's happening in the world, you know, politically and economically. And to see what's coming and change before it's too late. You can't sit here and go, I didn't know about what's coming in the UK and the Middle East, and now what am I going to do? You know, you kind of preempt and you move in a new direction, or you bring something new to the table. So for me, it's not just about painting, and art isn't just about I'm running around my house in a tie-dye dress and do paintings all day. It's a business. So I get up every morning. I'm in my studio by 8. I work completely without interruption until 12 or 1, have lunch. Then I'm in my office and I'm doing emails and shipping and logistics and newsletters and social media. It just never stops. And that takes as much time as actually doing the painting. So it's a very, very labor-intensive, and you have to be extremely disciplined to do it.
But you love it.
I do, but that's all I know, right?
Yeah,
you know,
after all this very time. Fortunate that you've been able to make a career out of what you're good at and what you love. And people often ask me, isn't it time for you to retire? And I say, why? You know, if you're doing what you love, why would you want to stop and then go and sit with a whole bunch of old people complaining about your eggs and you know, I mean, I'm being a bit brutal about it, but seriously, there is no reason to stop, and you're in one of those fields where as long as you've still got your brushes and you can still see and feel, good for you. Well, Ballito is very fortunate to have a world-class artist, Natasha Barnes. For those that are keen to look at your work online, where would they find it?
Well, I think the best place is Instagram. I have a very active Instagram page. It's at Natasha Barnes, underscore Natasha Barnes underscore. And there is a new part to it where people can buy the prints online. With Pixalot, I have a huge range out, and it's very affordable. Come ready framed, delivered to your house. And there's like 3 or 4 different styles of framing you can choose from. You get colors. You can have it on paper or canvas. So we do a lot of that for the industry, for decorators and things like that. Or if, you know, people from abroad, there's a very active print website, which I now offer as well as my art. But I have a very, very small presence in South Africa. So I have a gallery in Cape Town, the Artist Gallery, and 34 Bree Street, and they sell my originals. but the rest of it all goes abroad.
Wow. If you're fortunate enough to have a Natasha Bonds original, believe me, that's an investment that's worth hanging on to. Natasha, thanks so much for joining me on the Dave Charles Show. And more strength to your paintbrush, and I look forward to many, many more years of conversation.
Thank you, Dave. It was wonderful to
And we play out with one of your favorites. This is quite a serious tune. You have a passion for Leonard Cohen.
I do. It just brings back memories from, you know, I suppose not quite my childhood, but, you know, when you reach that sort of adolescence and you hear this melancholy sound coming from your dad's stereo.
Well, we're bringing back your melancholy sound.
Yeah.